Here we go. Welcome to the Transform with Travel podcast, where we share stories of personal transformation and life lessons through our experiences of traveling and exploring the world. Travel is the ultimate accelerator for personal growth, and it can be the root catalyst for the pivots and plot twists we make in our lives. I'm your host, Kelly Tolliday, and it's my mission to inspire you to live life to its fullest, travel with an open mind and heart, and let the world show you a new perspective. I'm so grateful you're here with us today, so let's dive right in. Happy exploring. Welcome to the Transform with Travel podcast. I'm so excited to have you here joining us. I have Romy Wallach here joining us today, and I am just so excited to share your story because we met a couple weeks ago and we just started talking about things that we were interested in, and you brought up this amazing challenge that you've done and continue to do. Yeah. And I had just interviewed someone for the podcast, Chris Dossel Smith, who had just swam the English Channel, or he was just talking about him swimming the English Channel. So we just started talking about these challenges and what it does for us and how much we've grown from it. And I was like, wait, you need to be on this podcast. And you're like, let's do it. So here we are. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited. Thank you for having me.
So everyone listening, we have Romy here. In 2021, she co-founded The Daily Drip, a platform providing content, resources, programming, and community to South Florida businesswomen on their journey to maximum potential, which I'm so excited. I love seeing all the content that you guys put out and really amplifying so many amazing businesswomen in our community. And your community is growing of 2,000 plus, which is incredible.
I think we're almost hovering around 4,000 at
this
point.
Whoa, okay, yeah. Wow. Update this bio.
Update my bio.
And Romy serves as a member of the Joe DiMaggio Planned Giving Committee. You're a board member of Piper's Angels Foundation and three times Crossing Crusader in the Crossing for Cystic Fibrosis, mentor for the Crossing for CF, and core committee member for the Crossing for Cystic Fibrosis. That is a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, you just go with CF.
CF always. You were born and raised in Toronto, Canada. Romy moved here in 2006 with her husband and her two kids, and we're so grateful that you moved here all that time ago. So thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So I'd love to start with that move, that moving your family from Toronto to Miami, which is quite a common path, but you normally see that when people are in their 60s or their 70s moving down from Canada down to South Florida. So can you tell a little bit about what was going on at that time?
Yeah, so it was kind of crazy. I never imagined that I wouldn't live in Toronto. It's not like in the US where people tend to be a lot more transient. You go to college, you move, it's very common. Toronto, you kind of don't really go anywhere else in the country. And my father had passed away in 1998. My husband and I got married in 99. And he had been wanting to move to Florida for as long as I could remember. And he got an opportunity to start a business. And I kind of figured, well, I'd rather have this to hold over him for the rest of our lives than be the one he resents for not moving.
Exactly.
I had a very good heart to heart with my uncle. And he said, you've got to do this for your family. This is going to be a good thing for you guys. I was extremely close to my mom and my sister beyond. We were attached to the hip. So it was a tough move. I think having kids that are young when you move someplace, it's a little bit easier to meet people because you can meet through the kids. Mm. And the fact that it was Florida and where I was in Florida, I had people coming down all the time to visit. So my mom was wintering down here. Friends were coming in and out. But I'd say it was 2 years before I felt a little more settled and acclimated. It was not an easy adjustment, but I'm super happy I did it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I moved from South Florida to Australia, and then we moved from Australia to Thailand, and then back to the US. And I feel like every time you make a big move like that, not just like a physical move or maybe even quitting a job and starting a new business or whatever it is, those weeks leading up, you're like, wait a minute, why am I leaving? This place is so great. I have all these friends. I have this family. It's like you get so nervous. And then afterwards, you can look back and be like, this was, you know, the best decision that we could have made.
Yeah, I think it was the best thing for our nuclear family. The four of us were even closer than I could have even hoped for. You know, it was really just us. So it was hard in the sense that I didn't have any support for a 3- and a 4-year-old. It was just me. So that was a bit of a challenge, but I actually loved just being with the kids all the time. But it's weird because then after you've done it, you're kind of like, now that I've done it, I could kind of do it again, I think. I wouldn't want to right now because I love where we live. I also think it's the kind of thing that can make or break a marriage. For us, it worked really well. It made us even closer. Mm-hmm. So I think that that was another positive to come out of it. But yeah, it's definitely, there's something to be said for starting a new life from scratch and then, you know, kind of looking back and thinking, wow, that's pretty awesome. that like I did this.
Yeah, like you have that reservoir of strength. Yeah. Like you said, I could do this again. I've done it before. I've done hard things. I can do it. And so you mentioned being able to meet friends through perhaps school or parks or playgrounds through kids. But for you and your husband and your own individual interests, what was that like for you as an adult to start over and make new friends?
It was – so his new friends were whoever I brought around. And my new friends were really the people that I was either meeting through the kids or I joined a local gym, which helped a little bit because it was more of like those boutique ones, not like an LA Fitness. So it was very community-based. It was hard. I think you kind of – when you first move, you're a little vulnerable. So you kind of say yes to every invitation.
Yes.
And then you kind of take them in and you're like, well, I think I may not have – I need to like raise the bar and be a little more discriminating about who I want to be around. So I don't know. It's weird. We've been here for like 18 years and I feel like there's been like seasons because I think like you can appreciate this as a mom too. As your kids go from one school to another school or they get engaged in one program or a sport, you become so involved in that those become your friends for a period of time. And then when you stop doing those things, there's a shift. Some of them survive. Some of them do not.
Exactly. And it's like friendship out of vicinity sometimes. Yeah. I can really relate to that. I remember first moving to Sydney and being like, I'm going to say yes to this and this person's coming over and we're going to go out and meet this person. And then you'd hang out with them a couple more times and you're like, ooh, I may have overshot that one.
And I think
I may have committed to this too early.
And I think it depends on how, like what you are like as a person. For me, I'm very happy with my own company in the sense that like, I don't need somebody to do something with me if I want to do something. Mm-hmm. So, which is how I got into paddling. Like when I loved running, I just went, I joined half marathon. Like I met people through that, but I never really sat around waiting for somebody to bring me into something or thought, oh, I would, but I don't have anyone to do it with. Right. So I was really good in that way, which made it a lot easier to meet people as well.
Yeah, that's super powerful, having the confidence in yourself to one, just be alone, or two, try something new on your own, because that's the only way that you can meet new people is when you go out there. And it also helps when you're doing things, like you said, out of like clubs that have interests. So running, paddling, going to the gym, art, whatever, wine club, like whatever it is for you. I think that's a really good piece of advice for anyone moving to a new city is what are you interested in and go seek out those people. Because at the very least, you have that in common with each other.
Well, and I talk about that with my kids, actually, because I say to them all the time, and especially more so with my son, my daughter's a little bit more social in a different kind of way, but to find things that you enjoy, that you're passionate about, because that's how you're going to meet the kind of people you want to align with, the people that you want to be around. That's what the Daily Drip has been like for me. That's what the Crossing is like. And a lot of the other things that I get involved in, you know, I didn't necessarily know people prior, but these particular things have brought the kind of people I want to be around into my life, which is amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like community is a really big theme for you.
Yeah.
And so speaking of the things that you're passionate about, it seems like philanthropy is at like the core value of who you are. You do so much in terms of, you talked about Joe DiMaggio and all the things that you do for the cystic fibrosis philanthropy. Can you talk like where did that passion for serving others and altruism and really getting involved and getting your hands dirty and digging deep, and where did that come from?
So I don't know any different because I grew up like this. So my grandmother was very active in philanthropy. She would host big events in her home. She was actively participating in events all the time. And as I got older, my mom stepped into that and she was very involved with my dad actually in an organization called ORT, which was the Organization for Research and Technology. And they provided educational resources in the tech space around the world in underserved communities, particularly in Israel and some other places. And it wasn't just about cutting checks. Like my sister and I, from the youngest age, we would go with them to these events and we would help them. So like there was an event called Chocolate Sunday and we would help like hand out raffle tickets or whatever. But we were always involved in all of that. My parents did a charity golf tournament every year. My sister and I worked that event for as long as I can remember. I think it's part of our like culture. I think like you grow up learning a lot about, like I'm Jewish, a lot about tzedakah and giving back. The best thing you can do is give when you don't have what there is to give. Mm-hmm. So it was just, I don't know. And it's unbelievably gratifying. honestly, like to be able to participate in something or be a part of something that you know is having an impact. I don't really know how someone can resist that like urge.
Right. So as you're saying, this has been a part of your family culture that forever. You grew up with. And specifically, you do a lot of work for philanthropies within cystic fibrosis and all of that. What was that part of your story?
So the crazy thing about the CF, like the crossing, is that I'd taken up paddleboarding kind of early COVID. And I actually had a friend, we would do it together, we'd go on little adventures, and then she moved to Turkey. So it was just me. And I would just go out and spend hours on my board. And I was on a call with a work colleague in January of 21. And he's like, oh, have you heard of the crossing? I was like, no, what is that? He's like, oh, you cross the ocean on a paddleboard. And I thought, that sounds super cool. And he sent me the link. And I always loved combining athletics or these kinds of things with a philanthropy. So when I would run a half marathon, I always ran for a cause. I figured, like, I'm not trying to qualify for the Olympics, but I can do something good while I'm doing it. So I didn't look that much into it, and I registered, and they replied saying they were false. So I was like, you know, I probably dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
Not the worst thing. Like, I just moved from using an inflatable board to, like, a real board. And I got a call in April saying, we have a spot that opened up. And I was too embarrassed to say no. And I just kind of went for it. I figured, you know, the worst case scenario is, like, I don't make it, but, like, that's fine. I was very okay with that. Mm. And I was actually most worried about how I was going to raise $1,500 in 2.5 months for something I didn't know anything about. I really didn't know what CF was.
So the cause came attached with the challenge that you wanted to do. Okay.
So I was like, that's cool. Like, I'll do this awesome thing. I'm raising money for an underserved community. Everybody wins. In my panic to raise this $1,500, I started right away. I got all the information from them. They're like, you set up your link, you do this, whatever. And by the end of the first weekend, I was well over the 1500 and I kept bumping my goal. And by the time we got to the crossing, I had raised almost $12,000 and I was the highest individual fundraiser.
Wow.
And it was like, it was so amazing that in a very short period of time, like, I learned, first of all, that, like, I just couldn't believe that I was able to do this thing in such a short period of time. The number of people that said yes, I think that was the most impactful part for me, is that I had almost 200 people donate. And I was like, this is just unbelievable. Like, it was really like an incredible experience.
Wow.
Really amazing. Yeah. So the crossing came around, and because I'm not a super planner, I just kind of say yes to things and I'm just like, it'll just figure it out. And I became friends with this guy who was like, you got to get pickle juice. You got to do all these things. I was like, dude, you're freaking me out.
Pickle
like,
juice.
A lot of helps with cramps. He had like all these things. And I was just like, it's going to be fine. Like, I just had what I had. And I'm like, it's going to be whatever. It was the worst weather conditions that they had had in terms of, like, in all the years in the history of the crossing. And I made it just over halfway that first year, just over 40 miles. And
that is still so much.
It was...
That's so much.
It was so much.
I paddled for 15 minutes with my daughter on the board. So an extra 30 pounds, literally 15 minutes. I can't even lift my shoulders right now. So that is so much.
It was, and you're paddling in the dark.
Yes.
It was a lot of things, but there was something to be said for the fact that ignorance is bliss. Mm. I didn't know anything to be scared of. I didn't know what I should be worried about. I was just like, I don't know. I guess I couldn't really imagine. Like, when I had signed up originally, I was like, how do you get your board there? Like, how do they fly it over? And they're like, no, you go on a boat. In the boat over there. I was like, oh,
so
cool.
Over there is, you're Bimini. From South Florida to Bimini.
So we boat over to Bimini, okay. And then we paddle back.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh my
gosh. It's wild. So yeah, that was my first year experience. And I think what I was overwhelmed by, Travis, for one, he's the executive director and father of Piper, and that's how this all began. I mean, it's hard not to get drawn in. He's just so inspiring and motivational, especially as a parent. I don't really know how you deal with the fact that you know that your child is facing a life-threatening illness mm-hmm. every single day, and that their life expectancy is significantly less than any... It's likely you'll outlive them. I don't mm-hmm. really know how you wrap your head around that. And so just being around people that deal with that, who are so positive and doing so much, I was like, I mean, if you can't get on board, I feel like you have a hole in your soul, right? Like it was, and then I started to meet people who had CF that were in the event. And I thought, oh my gosh, like there's no victim mentality here. These are the like true warriors. Like every day they wake up, they deal with their illness, and then they live with purpose. And I don't know, I don't know how you can't get swept up in it. And I realized in that moment that this was so much more than the paddle. The paddle's awesome. But that's like the for you part, you know, that was for me. The rest of it was just like being a part of something.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I can totally imagine the fervor of like getting swept up in that.
This episode is brought to you by Child & Company. Child & Company is South Florida's first family-friendly office space featuring private offices, a professional content creation studio, and childcare for hybrid work and work from home parents located in Boca Raton. Child & Company is founded on the belief that you shouldn't have to choose between raising a family and being career driven. Their core mission is to create an environment where family and work can exist in harmony. The best part to me as a mom is that you can pop in and breastfeed your baby or have lunch with your toddler if you like, and then pop back into your office for your Zoom meeting, which I think is so key, especially for newborn moms going back to work. It's the perfect transition from emerging out of the newborn bubble and getting back to the business you love. Child & Company provides you the flexibility to work in a beautifully designed, ergonomic private office with insanely good Wi-Fi connection and soundproofing while just being steps away from your child. They have monthly themes that they base their lessons on, like exploring the animals of the Amazon, which I obviously love when children get opportunities to learn more about the world and build a sense of curiosity. Child & Company offers weekly and monthly classes and events like Zumbini, music class for babies, mindful cooking for toddlers, big kid yoga, and mindful mama community events, and so much more. I've been a member since February 2023, utilizing their private offices and their professional content creation studio. Child & Company is where all of the magic happens for this podcast. Their beautiful recording studio is soundproofed with state-of-the-art equipment, microphones, lighting, and cameras, so you can record your podcast, course content, meditation clips, and anything else you might want to record for your business. The Child & Company team truly feels like family. They are an extension of my team over here at Rising Nature Retreats and the Transform with Travel podcast, as well as an extension of my own family. If you're local to Palm Beach and Broward County, do yourself a favor and check out Child & Company. Visit www.childandcompany.com or head over to Instagram at Child & Company. And so you mentioned Travis and you mentioned Piper. Can you explain a little bit of how they're involved with this paddle?
Yeah. So Travis is the executive director of Piper's Angels, and he actually did the crossing before creating the foundation.
Okay.
He found out his daughter Piper had CF when I believe she was four. I don't want to get all my numbers mixed up, but I believe she was about 4 years old. And what he found out early on was that as he looked for sort of natural, it's not remedies, natural things that he could do to help with her condition, they discovered that the salt air and the ocean air was really therapeutic for the mucus in the lungs for CFers. And so he would go out on his paddleboard and he would take Piper with him. And so it kind of all started from that. Piper's now, I want to say she's about 16. She's a phenomenal human being. She paddled this past year for her first time as part of a relay. It's just, yeah, like the dynamic between them, I can't imagine what that must be like to have a whole community that is doing something that's got your name behind it.
Yeah.
But it's just, he sort of took this situation and this diagnosis and found a way to give back to the entire CF community. Mm-hmm. So Piper's Angels is different than like a CF foundation in that the focus is on urgent financial need and programming for families all over. So really it's about how to give people with CF and their families the best quality of life. That's really what is behind all this and making that kind of an impact.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I love hearing people being able to take something that is so traumatic and so heartbreaking and still being able to pull themselves up and make a difference for others. Yeah. It just inspires you so much. And so you have this very powerful purpose, very powerful meaning attached to a very difficult challenge. And over the last few years, have you participated every year? Nope. Or
yeah. I went from joining that first year, becoming a mentor in year two, and after year three, I joined the board. Right before, yes. So Travis was very smart. He approached me about the board right after I had been awarded. I think I came in, I got my Iron Crusader coin, which means you go from beach to beach without ever getting on the boat.
Wow.
So it's highly coveted. It's something everyone wants, obviously, but there are things that happen. Nature, you know, the ocean is a masterful teacher, is what Travis always says. And it's true. There's no way, there's a lot of variables that you can't control. So if you have to get on your boat for any reason, which in this last year we did because of weather, you can be, you go beach to beach, but you don't get to be Iron Crusader. Mm. So I became Iron Crusader after my second year, and he came up to me and I was like, I was all caught up in it. So I right. was happy to, but I also felt like I love this organization. I love this community. And if there's a way that I can add value in any way, then I wanted to be a part of that, whatever that looked like. So it's awesome. It's been really great. It's been, I think I've gotten more from them than I've been able to give, in the sense that it's amazing what you learn about yourself and what you're capable of. And I think I've always kind of connected with athletics in that way. I think there's something about pushing yourself physically that kind of shows you what you're capable of in other areas of your life, if that kind of makes sense.
100%.
And so for me, the crossing has really become like this symbol of, like, every time I deal with my imposter syndrome or I doubt myself, it's like, A, you cross the ocean on a paddleboard. So there's that. And B, I think of the people who have CF and the fact that quitting's never an option. Mm. Nah, I don't feel like dealing with my CF today is not an option. It keeps me like sort of on point, like on track.
Yeah.
You know, and has given me confidence in areas of my life that I didn't have it, because it really showed me that, like, here was this crazy thing that I didn't think was possible, and it was.
Yeah. I can really relate to that, in the sense of using your athletic challenges for fuel for your life, but then also using your life challenges for fuel for your athletic. Sometimes I'll be doing something really hard, I'll be running really long, or just doing something, surfing, and a big wave comes, and I'm like, you gave birth to a child.
Yeah.
You can do this. Or then vice versa. Like, I'll be doing a really hard challenge or something's happening in my life. I'm like, you used to swim 5 hours a day when you were a competitive swimmer. You wow. can do this. You know,
yeah.
So it's like cool how you can take different parts of your life and the fitness into your life and your life back into fitness. And so, speaking a little bit about the athletic challenge, the actual logistics and the training. So that first year to now, what is, like, your training like for something like this? And then what's it actually like when you're on the water? Because that's open ocean, waves, sea life, weather, your body.
It's everything.
It's everything. The sun. Like, what's, yeah, training to race. What's that like for
you? Well, so the first year, there was no, like, I didn't really train per se. I was, like, I'm an active person. I'm athletic. I get on the board. So I really did. I didn't know what to expect. But having done that first year, going into the second year, I worked with a good friend of mine who also happens to have his own wellness pharmacy and works with endurance athletes and elite athletes.
Cool.
So he put a program together with me for that year. And a lot of my training consisted of endurance on the Peloton. So I would get on and just pedal for 2 hours, time on the water, of course, and then weight training. The second year that I did it, the ocean was like Lake Atlantic. Like, when I say flat, I mean, like, it was glass, but there was no wind. And I paddled behind a really big boat, which is not the ordinary. So you can't draft. So you're very far back. So it was pure manpower. The heat was excruciating. You just got to keep drinking. You don't really eat much. I don't, I should say. I live on those, like, jelly sport beans.
Yeah.
A Stinger waffle, maybe. And then the pickle juice helps with the cramping. So that I did.
That is so funny. Yeah. I've never heard of that.
Yeah. It's honestly, it was like almost every other break I took, I would take it.
Wow.
And so you kind of plot how long, you know, your breaks based on time. So the goal in the night is to try and push through as much as possible. So maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then you don't want to take more than 3 to 5 minutes of a break. The girl that I paddled with my second year was really struggling with, like, she was really nauseous. She'd come in from Hawaii. So our breaks took us a little longer, but we just kept, like, pushing each other, even when we weren't talking to each other.
So you have a partner typically that you...
So I was supposed to go alone.
Oh.
But she was coming from Hawaii. She didn't have a boat. And so Travis and Paul called me. I was like, no, I really want to do it alone. They're like, no, she really needs a boat. I said, okay. And I spoke to her and she was so amazing. And it was such a part of the experience. This past year, I paddled alone. So this was my first year doing it without anyone else behind the boat. Mm. My daughter comes as my crew every year.
Aww.
So it's been really special to watch her passion for this come to life. We've developed sort of a really tight, small group within where we just really encourage each other and support each other and just become like a family. And she's a part of that. Yeah. And it's wild because you've got a demographic of like, my daughter is probably the youngest at 20. And then like the oldest being like early 50s and then everything in between, married, single, like all over the map. And yet there's just this connection that exists that where we all just help each other with training, with life, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So got to see bioluminescence one year, saw dolphins.
What about the sharks?
Haven't seen a shark myself.
What?
I haven't seen, not on the paddle. I've seen a shark like when I've paddled.
Yeah,
otherwise.
No, I mean on the crossing.
But on the crossing, but there was somebody who had an experience with a hammerhead this year, but it went over super smooth because we're trained to handle these situations. Mm-hmm. And the reality is most of the time, you don't see anything out there. Like it's just blue ocean, like blue desert. It's amazing to see the sun come up and the moon all at the same time. Like there's things like that that you take in and you're like, no one will really get these experiences. Like it's such a unique experience.
G'day mates from the land down under. Just kidding. I'm right here in South Florida enjoying a true blue Aussie coffee, pastry, and meat pie at my absolute favorite cafe here in South Florida, Bite and Coffee. That's B-Y-T-E and Coffee, located in Lighthouse Point. Bite and Coffee is owned and managed by the absolute best couple from Down Under, Dan and Kat, who moved to South Florida from Melbourne, Australia with the dream of bringing the incredible Aussie cafe culture to the States. As someone who's lived in Australia for 5 years, I surely do miss my Aussie flat white coffee, brekkie buns, and sausage rolls. But what I miss more is the sense of community when you step inside your favorite cafe. You know that feeling when you walk in and they already know your order and it's ready to go? Yeah, that kind of feeling. Bite and Coffee brings the good vibes, delicious food and coffee, and the true sense of family. I can bring my little girls for breakfast and know that they are welcomed. If you're living in South Florida or just visiting and passing by, I highly recommend heading over to Bite and Coffee and grabbing a coffee with your breakfast or lunch, or even checking out their incredible wine and beer selection with a delicious charcuterie board at night. It's the perfect spot for a catch up with a friend or a business meeting. As a special gift to listeners, when you order at Bite, be sure to mention Transform with Travel for 10% off your order. So go ahead and check it out. Bite and Coffee, located in Lighthouse Points.
Yeah. And so this year when you did it alone, you don't have someone kind of pushing you next to you. I know you have your crew in the boat, but what is that mindset like for you? What's your mantra that you're telling yourself? Like, how are you every paddle and your arms feel like they're like lead? What's going through your head? Because there's a lot of physical prep, but that's mental fortitude. That's a mental game right there.
It's all mental. I would say that the first 40 or so miles are sort of like you're in a groove, like you're moving along. I'd say that it's like a half marathon for me. I never did a full. I never hit the end and wanted to do more.
Yeah, right.
I'm
good here.
In fact, like the anxiety where it splits off and you're like, oh my God, I got to make sure I end up in the right lane.
Right.
My worst fear. But I'd say miles 40 through 60 is where you have to dig really deep because that I feel like is the hardest stretch. Because once you cross that hurdle and you get kind of like to mile 60 and you realize you only have 20 miles, it's like, okay, like that's a Saturday. I got this. But that middle section it's all mental. Travis does he had a YouTube video that he did going into my second year. And it really was like walking you through the visualization, coming up with a mantra to your point. And he had this saying that I still don't remember. He's told me a million times. I still don't remember what it actually means. But I repeated his because I just couldn't. And I put in my own expletives during some of the harder parts. But my daughter really keeps me going. I have to say, like, every time I look at her while she's on that boat and I think, you know, she's watching me this is such an opportunity to see like true determination, to not give up, to not quit, the commitment and seeing it through. You know, unfortunately with the crossing, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, mm-hmm. and it kind of goes beyond mental. Like, you can get really sick from a number of different things. Some people got carbon monoxide poisoning from the back of the boats. I struggled in the night this year, which I'd never experienced, and I felt really nauseous, and I didn't know at some point, there was a moment where I toyed with getting on the boat, but I pushed through, and then the sun came up and it was super flat, and I was going to kill it. I was going to hit 14 hours or less, and then the weather picked up and everyone was called off the water. We had to reroute, which was definitely disappointing.
Yeah.
But big picture, I mean,
yeah.
Right? Like, I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a mental game, I would say, for the most part. I honestly think that it's a lot more mental than it is physical. Yeah. And I think anyone who does sort of endurance, any kind of endurance athletics, there comes a point where your body does not want to do any of the things that you want it to do. And so it really becomes like sheer mind over matter.
And that's where attaching yourself to a meaning to why you're doing. I mean, most endurance athletes running a marathon, doing the crossing, my friend swimming the English Channel, like there's usually some sort of philanthropic or meaning, or you're dedicating it to someone, and that's what helps keep you going.
That's
too.
The passion, the fuel. I don't think I would, like, I actually don't race in paddling. Like, I mean, there's a lot of my close friends in the community that you know, that go to Chattajack and all these different things, and I think it's awesome. It's not for me. For me, the crossing doesn't really feel like a race. It's really more of a mission.
Right.
So I don't, and I don't really have the bandwidth, to be honest, to do that.
Just add one more thing.
I'm like, no, it's hard enough to keep all these plates in the air. But I do think that that's exactly what it is. Like, when I push through that and I think about the gift I have of just being able to breathe every day without having to even think about it.
Yeah.
You know, and especially, like I said, I've become very close with people that have CF, and they're just insane warriors. Like, Riley, who moved from Montana, she's 20, I want to say 25, came in to do the crossing this year, and she's just unbelievable. Like, I just look at her and her, like, joy of life and just her, I don't know, everything about her. It's, like, hard not to feel all revved up. And this year, her goal is to be the first female solo CF warrior to do the entire 80-mile crossing.
Wow.
And we are all pulling for her, yeah.
When does the race normally go?
June.
Okay.
So it's end of June. I think the date this year is the 24th.
Okay, so 2024.
Yeah.
She's got this.
Yes, she has got this.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so I can imagine after you've trained, you've raised money, you're part of this group of people, although you're all individual athletes, you're a part of this bigger cause. Sometimes you have a partner, you've got a crew. You land on the beach in South Florida. What's happening?
It's amazing. So the first year we got pulled off. So we had to boat in the last like 40 or miles, so miles. And I said to my captain, I said, I want to get off the boat and I still want to paddle in, because to me, I had imagined the moment where I go up at the beach, at the beach landing. And B, I was like, I still want this moment. I felt very much like the fact that I didn't complete the full 80 should not determine whether or not I had that moment of getting on the beach and having that moment. Mm. And I'm so grateful I did, because not everybody did. It's hard to even, like, the emotion of it, the energy at the beach, like, it's like palpable. And even that first year when I didn't complete it, it was like the best moment of my life. The second year, I actually finished the whole thing, never got on my board. And I remember I went right for Travis and Ryan, who was my good friends. But then all of a sudden I saw my son and I just like fell apart. Like, I just couldn't believe I did it. I was so happy to see him. I was freaking out. It was amazing. People showed up. My friends were there. Girls from the Daily Drip came to support. There's really nothing like it. I don't know what else there is like the beach landing. It's just amazing. And everyone gets that moment to celebrate. So however far you've crossed, whatever you did, relay, et cetera, like that moment is for everyone that even signed up. Like if you signed up, you should be crossing that. If you raised any money, if you paddled 1 mile, get on that podium and enjoy that. Like, you still were a part of it, you know? So it's unbelievable. I highly recommend people show up at the beach landing if they don't want to cross.
Yeah, I'm like, I want to be a part of this. This sounds amazing.
And a lot of people end up signing up because of
that. I'm sure.
Actually, my relay partner, I'm doing a relay this year for the first time. And he was at the beach landing by accident the year before. And that's how he ended up signing up. Yeah.
That's incredible. And so after the beach landing, everyone's all jazzed up. Everyone's hugging and crying and they're so excited. Then you get back to daily life. This is, you know, you get back to work on a Monday and you're sitting down. And I can imagine it's just like, wait, what? What do you mean? There's like two different worlds right now. A lot of athletes that I speak to who do a challenge in this capacity deal with some sort of post-challenge depression or just post-challenge slump. And although perhaps it might feel good knowing I have the next year to do this, some athletes only do one thing once and that's it. What has that been like for you post-challenge?
So I think it's gotten easier each year because the connections that I have with the people in the crossing are so close. So having that carry over and not just be this one and done kind of feeling, I think really helps. So we talk a lot about this with some of the newer crossing crusaders when they come on, to really prepare yourself for that, because especially leading up to it, between events that we put together and the training, and you get through like this, it's so intense, and then you do it, and then there's the awards. So you get a little bit of like, you still kind of push through that. And then to your point, it just kind of drops off, right? Like, you know, even if you're doing the next year, you don't start training till January. So it's sort of like pretty slow. Mm. It's definitely a thing, the depression. It's a real thing. And so we all just kind of check on each other, try to make plans so that we can just kind of meet up to just feel connected, because it's like from 100 to 0.
Exactly.
And it is a really hard thing to get through. And the problem with it is that not too many people can appreciate what that was. You know, you can tell people about it. So I went to overnight camp, and it's sort of like when you get home from camp and you don't want to talk to anyone that you weren't there with until school starts. You had this 2-week window where I didn't want to talk to anyone I knew from the city. And it was just all my camp friends for 2 weeks, because we had just come off this like very intense, you know, for the last 7-8 weeks, we lived together. We did everything together. We had all these crazy experiences, and nobody understands except for the people you're with. Mm. And I feel like that's kind of like what the crossing is like, is you don't know until you really do it. And then it's just, my sister came this year and she got to be a part of it, which was unbelievable.
Amazing.
Yeah, she flew in to be my crew.
So we talk about this a lot actually on retreats. It's the same thing. We go through 4 days, 5 days, 6 days where we're doing amazing excursions, and some people are doing things for the first time they've ever done. We're doing really deep healing work. We're in nature. And then afterwards we talk about that integration period and how, you might be vibrating at such a high level from either the adrenaline of finishing a race or spending 8 weeks with your best friends at camp or going on a retreat. You are coming back into your daily life at such a high level, and that might not be meeting where the other people in your life are at, and that incongruency can feel really off. And so I can 100% understand that feeling. And I think what probably it sounds like it helps you is, again, having that community of people to fall back on, and then also knowing that you're a part of the cause itself as to why you're doing it.
Well, and especially now that I'm part of the board and I'm part of the committee, so I stay involved consistently throughout the year. But I think any kind of life experience that is intense in that way, that is shared with a select group of people, and I mean, listen, we're about 200 paddlers, but I think it leaves such an imprint. Mm. And I think if you didn't see those people and then saw them 20 years later, it would be like no time has passed, because that shared experience will never go away, whatever 100%. You make of it after the fact. So
100%.
Yeah.
We always say shared experiences, especially in nature, bind you together. Shared experiences in nature bind you together. And this just popped into my head, but I'd love to, like, what have you learned from the ocean, from being with Mama Ocean
I know.
For so many hours during the night? Not many people get a chance to spend, not just even on a boat, like you're on a board. That's the only thing separating you from you and the ocean. What have you learned from nature, from the ocean herself?
I find nature in general, but particularly the ocean, very healing for me. So I grew up, even though I was in Toronto and we grew up and obviously it's winter all year round, we had a boat and we would spend our summers spending a lot of time on that boat. And my dad loved it. And we windsurfed and we water skied. So for me, the water is really where I feel the closest connection to my dad. And I actually tape a picture of him and my uncle, who was like my dad after my dad passed, on my board. Because that, to me, I kind of like, I'm looking at them, they're looking at me. It's like we're a part of it. They're in my head, they're in my heart. But I find that there's something about the smell and the sounds and the everything about the ocean in general, just incredibly healing. And I don't know, it's hard to even put into words, to be honest. Like I just, for me, like just seeing it, even if it's from the car window, is transformative. You know, sometimes like if I see sand, my family makes fun of me, I need to take my feet, my shoes off. Like they have to be off. I need to feel sand in my toes. My husband will stand there with his shoes and socks on. I'm like, you're ruining this.
Here she goes again.
I'm like, you're ruining the whole experience. Please put your feet. He goes, but what do you care? I'm like, I care. I want you to feel it. But I just learned, I think what's crazy about the ocean is it's so unpredictable. Like we go out there and there's just nothing. You can do all the planning you want to do, but there is like every time you go out there, it's a different experience. You really have to turn yourself over to the elements. Mm. And it's kind of like just a leap of faith, blind trust. And I don't mind it. I'm like, this is like, I'm here for that.
Yeah.
I love it. And you. I love the creatures.
Yeah. Have you ever seen any like dolphins or turtles?
Oh, yes. I've had so awesome cool. dolphin encounters, like so many good ones. They've under my board, hopping around, like watching them flip. Turtles, rays, sharks, jellies even. Like I think it's all amazing.
Yeah.
And just so cool to see. And I like to go by myself.
Yeah.
I like to spend like time out there alone.
Yeah. We were paddling, me and my daughter, just on like a soft top foamy, nothing crazy. But she's an extra 30 pounds, like I said. So I was like, whoa, this is a lot harder. But there was a ton of moon jellies out. I don't know what's going on with the ocean right now, but in South Florida, there's a ton of moon jellyfish. And it was so cool for her. She's only three. And she was like, jellies, jellies, jellies. Aww. And then we got back to the shore. She's like, I want to see more jellies. And so it was cool to just like being so parallel to the, like you're on top of the water, but it's not like you're on a boat, like you are so close to it.
Well, I think that's what I love, so cool. The appeal is like, you're really like so immersed, right. Like in a very real way. Mm-hmm. And like you, my kids loved the beach and the ocean. Thank God it would have like destroyed my soul if they hadn't when they were little, because that's where we killed a lot of our time.
Yeah.
Like it's free and it's awesome.
And they will not nap any, like the best naps they'll ever have is after they go to the beach. So it's like the best.
And it's so liberating. Yeah. I loved watching my kids like just soak it all up. They loved it.
And so with your kids growing up, and so they moved to South Florida at a very young age, and I'm sure you guys traveled back and forth to visit family. Did you do any big travels with them or road trips with them as kids? What was that like for you, like immersing them in your own version of nature as kids?
Yeah. So when we moved here, the deal with my husband was that we would spend our summers up in Canada, Toronto. So, but we would road trip back every year, and we would plan our road trips around baseball games because my son was very into baseball.
How awesome.
We'd stop in Philly. We stopped in Pittsburgh. We stopped in Washington. We went to Cooperstown 1 year. We did – so – and I just – there's nothing better than a road trip with the kids. Like we loved it. Like I know people dread it. I loved it. I loved the quality time that we had together, because once we got to Toronto, it was a big group of us. Like my sister, her four kids, like it's awesome. Yeah. But it was like the part of the summer that we got just us. And then my kids went to overnight camp. So they were spending like their whole summer just really in nature, you know, like no phones, no electronics, no nothing. They were on the lake, skiing, water, like all those kinds of things. And I think it was like the best thing for them to like, I think there's a lot to get from overnight camp experience, living with other people, the independence of not having mom and dad kind of handling all your shit.
For sure.
And just, like there was so much growth in them over the summer. So yeah, we did a lot of road trips. We did a couple of overseas trips. We have family in Israel, so we went there a couple times. But
it's so cool.
Being with family.
I was just talking about this, a friend. So my daughter, she's three. She is a bit of a homebody. She always asks, I want to go home. I want to go home. I'm like, let's go to dance class. No, I want to go home. So we've been prepping her. We're going on this big trip to Southeast Asia at the end of the year. And so we've been prepping her that we're going. We're reading books about going to Thailand. We're watching YouTube videos. We're doing all these things. And my cousin was telling me, she's actually on the podcast as well. Her name is Candon Schwantes, for those listening. They were saying that her second daughter was also a little bit of a homebody, and they were going to Spain, but she was really into dance. So they showed her videos of flamenco dancing, and then they made an effort to go to the dance, to watch dance when they were in Spain. So that reminds me, when you were saying my son's really into baseball, yeah. So to make this trip more like how to integrate them into your travels, you went to a bunch of baseball games. Like, I think that's a really cool way of, like, it's not just about us as parents. Like, how do we get the whole family on board? And
you got to meet them where they're at.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, people always ask me about that, because now that my kids are grown, and it was like, I took an active interest in the things that they were interested in. I wanted to, like, you know, if they came into the room, we watched what they want. My son was very into sports, and I grew up as the daughter of a dad who was obsessed with sports, and he didn't have sons. It was just me and my sister. So I was already kind of sports savvy. We played all sorts of sports, and it's been so cool to have that same connection and relationship with my son. Like, we watch these, every sports documentary, the 30 for 30s, games, you name it, we do it together. We actually used to do a mother-son trip every year, and we'd go to Dunedin to see the Blue Jays spring training.
Oh, how fun.
It was awesome. It was just the two of us. I grew up in Toronto with a friend that ended up working for the Jays out there.
Oh,
so
cool.
We went, one of the years we went, we got to go on the field. We met all the Jays players. My son is like, you need to chill out.
I'm
like,
right.
Oh my God. I'm like, so cool.
It took
like,
Mom, be cool.
Oh,
be
he
cool.
was like,
there's no cool.
Not cool. I was like, this is awesome.
That's
so
awesome.
I did a lot of the, and my daughter did competitive cheer. So we traveled a lot for cheer, and it was just the two of us. So I highly recommend, especially if you have multiples, carving out one-on-one time with your kids is, I think it's the best thing you can do. It really helps to just kind of solidify the time they need alone with you.
Yeah, I actually really love that, because I think when they're young, it's easy to just kind of group them together because,
yeah.
you know. But then when they're older, really making that time, like a dad-daughter trip, a mother-son trip, like doing all those things. I grew up doing a program called Indian Princess here in South Florida.
Yeah, I have a friend who does that.
Okay, yeah. And so it's like a father-daughter camping trip, and we would do it twice a year. And I still, to this day, it's some of my favorite
awesome.
Memories. You're in nature. It's that independence. Those dads aren't watching you every 5 seconds.
Like, they're, no, they're dads.
Our toothbrush case was not opened once that whole trip. But like you said, with your kids going to camp, it was that independence that was built. It's that bond that only me and my dad will understand. We have inside jokes that just me and my dad will understand. And so I think that's like a really powerful tool. And you can continue doing that for as long as your kids will let you. And actually, when they're in their 20s, I know, and from my experience, I'm like, wait, where are all my free vacations again? You can take me on a trip anytime you want.
Well, that's what's been so great about the crossing for me, is that this is something that, like, Abby and I do together, and it's become like, we prep for it. We, you know, we get to the island, we go on adventures in the day. Like, there's a couple days in Bimini before we actually cross. It's so, like, we look so forward to it.
Yeah.
It's really something that's become so special that I don't even know that it would be the same if she wasn't on that boat and if she didn't come with me. Like, I don't. So much of why it's so meaningful and has been so special is because she does it with me.
That's so special.
Yeah.
And I know that that's impacting her in so many ways,
too. I think so. Yeah. Like, this year was really cool. She got her own fundraising link.
Oh, awesome.
And wanted to raise her own money this year. Yeah, it was amazing. It's been really, really amazing.
It's like that intergenerational family culture of philanthropy just continuing to get passed down. So that's beautiful.
My son volunteers on the beach landing.
Oh.
Yeah.
The whole family
is all there. Yeah.
So the very last thing that I want to touch on is the daily drip.
Mm.
So I mentioned this in your bio ahead of time, but it's a community of businesswomen, specifically in the South Florida area. I know you guys are kind of expanding.
We're growing.
you're growing. And it's such a it ties into this philanthropy aspect, because there is so much that you guys do that is involved with philanthropy, and so many of your women in your community lend their services or sponsor or do something within philanthropy. What has that been like for you to watch the Daily Drip grow with you and your business partner, Nicole? What has that been like for you to watch something so important to you and now so impactful with 4,000 plus community members? What's that journey been like?
So it's actually been like a whirlwind, to be honest. It was, you know, we laugh because I think it's the deluge kind of happened to us rather than something that we set out to do. But to your point, at the root of it was always giving back. It was like, how do we elevate? How do we support? How do we provide resources for women like ourselves that are growing businesses, juggling families, home lives, whatever the case may be? And from the onset, it was really important to us that we establish, you know, that we have philanthropy partners, you know, that we are doing things for the community. And we found so many organizations that we were that in such alignment with. We pick a charity every year that becomes our nonprofit partner for the year.
Oh, cool.
And so our first year was Joe DiMaggio Children's Hospital. And so we spend that year really talking about the organization, sharing with the community the services that they have to offer, and trying to help get the attention towards that organization, sharing the events they have going on and helping them fundraise. This past year was 211 Broward. So being able to, you know, especially 211 Broward is really special this year, especially because mental health has been pretty much, I think it's all anyone's kind of talking about at this point. And they're an organization that really kind of runs quarterback for all the resources you would need. So being able to shine a light on that and expose their resources to the community and being a part of that has been really special for us. But I don't know, it's pretty cool to start something and then see it really resonating with people. I mean, Nicole and I feel very fortunate that people trust us, that they kind of feel what we're doing in a really meaningful way and want to be a part of it. There's something really special that happens in a lot of the contributor meetings and our thought leadership meetings where women who do all different things and are at different places in their lives, but the connections that happen, it's unbelievable. It's really become such a strong community of support, you know, for the woman that's like, I don't know, I want to try this, but I'm nervous, I can't, whatever. And to have a whole community of people behind her to make her realize that, like, she's not going to fail because we're all here behind her. So whatever happens, like, that's really, I don't know, I feel like very lucky to have the opportunity to be able to do this. And especially with Nick, I mean, we're like sisters, so.
And it's so cool to find someone who you gel with from a business partnership, because it's really hard to find, one, the right balance to your own strengths and your own weaknesses, but then also just the level of business acumen, the level of professionalism that you hold yourself to. It's hard to find.
It is hard.
And the same, you know, similar visions and values and all of that. So it's really cool that you guys get to be able to do that together.
Well, and I think at the end of the day, being able to communicate as well, I think has been critical. Like Nicole and I are, I'd say we always laugh because we're like, we share a brain. So I would say even though 99.9% of the time we really are on the same page in almost every way, we also don't shy away from having tough conversations with the other one to just be like, you know, like whatever's going on. But we have that level of relationship and trust in one another to be able to really like have real talk,
right,
you know, about what's going on. And I don't know how, I got to be honest, the solopreneur journey, I don't know if that would have been for me. This is a whole different, having a partner in this has been a game changer. And not just any partner, having specifically Nicole,
the
for
partner.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, me and my business partner, Chloe, the other half of Rising Nature Retreats, we always talk about that. Like, we were both doing our own thing. And in some sense, we do still have our hands in our own things. I know you and Nicole each have your own jobs outside of Daily Drip as well. But we were like, wow, this is so much easier. And it's not even easy, but this is even like this is, it's flowing more. There's more opportunities. I'm having a rough week. She can take something on. She's having a rough week. I can take something on. So having that is, I think is important for my journey. At least I know not everyone feels that way, but it seems like we have similar.
I think like so much, we do so much where we're just talking things through together all the time, which I think is like, I don't know how people do it if they don't have that kind of resource in their life.
Like have to make that decision for themselves all the time.
No. Yeah. It is definitely, I don't know that it's easier, but it's definitely more fun.
Exactly.
To be able to, and like, so even if it's sucking, at least it's sucking together.
Yeah, exactly. You go like commiserate together. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I always close out these episodes with rapid fire questions at the end. So we'll see what comes up. They're all related to travel. So number one is, if you could only go back to one country, place, or town, whatever it is, in the world, where would it be and why?
One country in the world. Oh, it's so complicated. There's a couple that come to mind, but I would say right now, because my son and I have been watching Stanley Tucci.
Okay.
His Italy cuisine tour.
Yeah.
I would love to go back to Italy. It was one of my favorite countries for sure to visit, and the food, like to do a food journey.
Absolutely.
But I lived in Switzerland for a semester of high school.
Okay. So where in Switzerland were you?
In Neuchâtel.
Okay. Well, I'm not sure. Is that so on the closer
to the
German?
French side.
On the French side. Okay.
And we lived with a local woman who only spoke French. And it was, so I traveled a lot. That's why I was like, one country? I saw so many cool places. But I would say Italy right now would be where I'd want to go back.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I did a semester in Switzerland in college. But we're kind of close to Lausanne. So, yeah. So it was really cool.
But that's if I wanted to go back to. You didn't ask me where I want to go, like my dream place to go.
So that's the next question.
Oh, see how I jumped ahead?
So where's next on your bucket list?
My absolute number one dream place to go is Africa. Ooh. I want to go on safari.
Okay.
Like a real proper safari. I did photography for a while. I love nature. I'm dying to go on safari. That's the big trip.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you have a specific country or are you just going to see where it takes you?
I'm open to kind of feeling it out with people I know who've been to Africa because there's a few different countries that have like different kinds of safari experiences. So I'm not entirely committed yet, but that's what I want.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Number three is what's the biggest life lesson you've learned while traveling?
Life lesson. I'm trying to think. Like, I don't know that I would say life lesson, but what I love and I think is the best way to kind of immerse yourself in the culture of any new place you go to is I love being on foot, walking through the streets with no real agenda. Mm. Like, I don't need to go into a million museums or that kind of stuff, but like, there's nothing like just walking through the streets of this place you've never been and walking into a restaurant and eating something, like just being really immersed in it and recognizing how it's just really cool that people are living so differently all over the world. Like I sit and I'll be in a restaurant. I'll look like in whether it's Italy or whatever. And you're like, I wonder what it's like when they leave here.
Right.
Like, what is their life like? Like, what is their house like? What is this? Like, I think that's so cool.
Yeah.
You know, and how is it so different from what I'm used to?
I do that a lot. A lot. I'm always like, well, I'm always looking for long, like, what is a long-term rental? I just want to like be here. I remember we were walking up to the very top of the Hora in this city that we were in, this island that we were in, a Greek island. Hora is like the main town city square on the Greek islands. And we were walking up these tiny little walkways. There's no cars that can get up there to get to the city center. There's no cars. And we're just passing by windows and you're hearing music of these people living in these houses. You're smelling the smells. You're passing by and this house smells like floral and this house smells like some Greek dish and all these different songs and people are singing and you're just like, you know, when you're walking, you can notice the cat sleeping at the doorway. You can notice the flower hanging over the walkway. Like it's just those little things that you can notice when you're walking that I also really appreciate.
Yeah. I just like to tour. Mm-hmm. Like I just like to be on foot, like walking around, wandering around. I love that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then the very last question is if you could give a piece of advice to a beginner traveler, someone who wants to get out there but not quite sure how, what would you say to them?
So it's funny. My son, that you asked this. So he's going to be 22 and this is what he's looking for. He wants to travel by himself and we've talked it. He's very into food. He's a big foodie. So he's looking to kind of plan a trip around his interests and a mix of both like the food element, plus he's very into history. So I think like, I don't know, but just take it all in. Like if you're going to go somewhere, like try local things. Like don't go to Italy and eat at McDonald's. Don't go to these places and do the things. Like really like try and meet the people there. Like I loved that. I loved meeting people from different places. I loved finding out where the locals like to hang out. That would be my other piece of advice. Find out where the locals hang out. Like, never mind the big tourist places. Like, I think it's really cool to find the stuff that's off the beaten path.
For sure.
Yeah.
Or just, like, talk to someone. Go to your barista and say, hey, I'm looking for the best pasta in this area. I'm looking for the best coffee. Where's somewhere that you would go on the weekend? And then you really get a good glimpse of what it's truly like to go. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining today. I would love for people to be able to connect with you online. So please share all the places that you want to share with, all the things.
I will share with my Instagram. I will share LinkedIn, all of those things. And as we get closer to the crossing, I will be posting all of the things that are relative to that as I fundraise actively again this year.
Awesome. Yeah, and yes. I can link to the show notes and everyone Amazing. Will be able to get
thank
that.
You.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Transform with Travel podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you never miss an episode of inspiration, adventure, and exploration. If you felt inspired by this episode, please rate and review in whatever streaming app you're listening from. This allows us to spread the word even more and continue to serve up weekly doses of adventure. As always, we'd love if you could share the episode with someone in your life who you think will benefit from this conversation. Thanks so much for listening. This is your reminder to get out there and keep on exploring.